welcome back to Let's Talk Future. I'm your host, Jane Ross, and we're here at a very interesting time in the middle of 2026. The stock market is performing quite well, with the AI theme continuing to dominate. Employment numbers are stable, earnings are decent, and IPO activity, as evidenced by the recent SpaceX pricing, is garnering significant support from individual investors. But at the same time, there continue to be major headwinds pressuring consumers. Elevated debt, high food and gas prices, high mortgage rates, these are all real sources of stress. And given that consumer spending represents 2/3 of GDP, we're wondering if we should be nervous about a turn. So here, we've invited Brian Nagel to discuss all of this. Brian is a managing director and senior analyst covering the consumer growth and e-commerce sectors at Oppenheimer. Now, Brian and his team believe that fuel prices are perhaps the single most significant variable affecting consumer spending. And despite the recent signing of an Iran deal memorandum, the details of a plan are scant, which makes it difficult for Brian to issue an all-clear regarding high gas prices. So I think our timing for this discussion is quite good, and let's go ahead and welcome Brian.
Well, thanks, Jane, for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, it's so good to have you here. So let's start big picture. You know, as I mentioned, credit card debts at record highs, delinquency rates are at peak, 15-year peaks, gas prices, food prices. What's your sense of the health of the consumer?
Oh, look, it's a great question, okay? And it's something where my team and I and the clients we talk to regularly are wrestling with constantly, you know, because I think your opening was perfect. I mean, there's so many big positives happening out there right now. You know, things that are outside of my realm of expertise, but like in the AI, I mean, obviously we have the markets at all-time highs. Real estate prices continue to track basically at all-time highs. But, you know, from the way I look at the consumer, and given the consumer companies I cover, you know, which basically I cover a number of names. We have roughly 25 companies in our coverage universe, and they serve consumers across the gamut, right? From generally higher income consumers all the way down to lower income consumers. But look, as I look at the consumer backdrop out there, I think it's been challenging. You know, and I've said that for a while now, probably the last 1 to 2 years. And I think right now we're at a point where it's potentially getting worse, more challenging, largely as a result of these elevated gas prices. You know, and it's for a lot of consumers, you know, particularly those in the lower, maybe mid income, gas prices are a big deal. And when we've seen this move essentially, you know, per gallon, you know, go from less than $3 now up to towards $5, that can over time have a rather significant impact upon discretionary spending.
So let's stay on that for a second. And I know you've written extensively about this, but it sounds like the consensus view on Wall Street is that gas prices are going to stay elevated in the short term and then trend off later this year as, you know, the war gets resolved and this and that. How do you look when you analyze all of this? What's your thinking about those assumptions?
Well, look, I think it's overly optimistic. Now, so I'll put this in two buckets. Right. So, you know, like you said, from a market perspective, so for investors, I think with investors, there's still very much a hope that gas prices moderate and moderate relatively quickly. Also, this is not somewhat ties together, right? But as the companies I'm talking to, you know, they have their expectations, you know, that they embed in their business, allows them to make business decisions. I think they are also still relatively optimistic that gas price, this is a blip, so to say. The gas prices will eventually, you know, should eventually moderate in the not too distant future. Now, I am not a gas price expert, right? I follow the U.S. consumer. That said, I've spent a lot of time studying gas prices over time, and I am spent a lot of time watching this current dynamic. I'm concerned. I don't see a very quick path lower for gas prices. So my worry is either from the, you know, on the investor side, you know, from a market sentiment standpoint, or, you know, from my companies, is that they're going to prove their views right now could prove overly optimistic, in that we very much could see them get disappointed as these higher gas prices persist. You'll persist through the summer, into the back half of 26 into 27. You know, and that's where then is over that timetable, that's when you're going to start to see some real damage done. You know, what I mean by damage done, discretionary spending getting more and more impacted. You know, the expectations for these companies, they're going to have to, when we talk about guidance, right? The, you know, their own internal expectations, that's going to have to moderate lower if, to the extent that gas prices remain elevated for a while.
Yeah. And, you know, you just referenced, but we're getting into some interesting time periods as it relates to gas prices. We're heading into the summer when people start driving and taking vacations. And then after that, we have to contend with back to school. So in your work, I guess you're going to get a lot more data in the near term to see how the consumer is behaving with high gas prices, right?
No, that's exactly right. And look, in maybe overly simplistic as it sounds, Memorial Day is a big deal, you know, because that's the unofficial start to summer. And for a lot of people, you know, summer entails more driving. You know, so and it's interesting. So I'll just talk about one of the subsegments I cover is the auto parts retail space. Okay, so that's companies like AutoZone, O'Reilly, you know, some others on the service side. I've spent a lot of time looking closely at them lately because, you know, for a few reasons. One, they're tied more to gas prices, because they sell essentially parts for vehicles, okay? And one of the bigger drivers of parts needing vehicles is wear and tear in those cars, okay? So they, from a business model perspective, they're very tied to gas prices. The other piece of it is, generally speaking, the core consumer of the auto parts retailers and the auto parts service companies are lower income, okay? So they're more impacted by higher gas prices. And what I'm seeing right now, and this is really in real time, you know, this is me sensing around what sales are doing right now. It seems that sales within the auto parts space have started to moderate. You know, we've seen this over the last few weeks. And it's very, very interesting because we started the year with some favorable weather dynamics. Harsh weather drives generally better sales of auto parts. They're benefiting there. We had these larger year-on-year tax refunds. Okay, that's also a driver. But as those benefits now have faded, I think what's happening is these higher gas prices are starting to take hold. And we're seeing now somewhat weaker sales in auto parts. And I, to me, that's probably one of the best subsegments to kind of watch first to see what ultimately could happen here. But to exactly your point, this is not lost to me. This is this dynamic, this softer sales dynamic within the auto parts space is starting to happen as the summer driving season kicks off.
That's a great insight. Thank you for that. And I want to throw another thing at you. And I don't know how you view the consumer confidence index. You know, we're reading a lot that consumer confidence is at lows and people are expressing some pessimism about the near-term outlook. How important is that?
It's definitely worth watching. Okay, so over the, and I've been doing this for a while, right? And so I, for a very long time, have kept a close eye on, you know, the consumer confidence indices, okay? Now, what I've noticed over time is that those indices do not track spending in real time, imperfectly. Okay, so basically, another way, what I've said to our clients a while is that, you know, what seems to happen is consumers or respondents say one thing in those surveys, and at least in the very near term, may do something else with their spending. Okay, but all that said, over time, there's a correlation. And exactly what you're pointing out, if you look at, you know, some of the more notable consumer confidence surveys lately, they're at all-time lows. They're now lower than financial crisis of 2008 to 2010. That says something. Okay, and I think, you know, look, we asked why consumers are responding like this in the surveys. Gas prices, I think, are a key contributor. But then there are other factors as well. I mean, look, I think the jobs market has gotten weaker. Still, if you look at the headline numbers, we're basically at full employment. You know, the U.S. economy continues to add jobs. But when you dive deeper below those headline numbers, what you see is it's getting more difficult for people to find jobs, to replace a job that they may have lost. And I think, too, there's a lot of AI angst out there. You know, we hear, you know, again, whether it's or not it's really happening is hard to say. But you, anytime you read the news, watch the news, you're hearing about some major company enacting some type of layoff and has something to do with AI. So I think that's all contributing to these now very historically weak consumer confidence index. And look, the point I'm trying to make is while they may not move in lockstep with spending, I would definitely not dismiss them. They are an indication of the health, or at least the propensity for that consumer to spend on discretionary items.
Right. Okay. So why don't we shift to try to find where some of the bright spots might be. You know, this consumer landscape is not uniform, and that, you know, you're very good at kind of figuring out where the opportunities are. For our listeners, where are the bright spots out there?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. So, you know, what I keep hearing, I mean, I guess one easy answer to that question is you go to retailers or to brands that focus on higher income consumers. Okay, so that's an easy answer. And, you know, it's relatively simple to see why that's the case. And as I mentioned just a few moments ago, you know, there's some big positives out right now with the equity markets at all-time highs, with real estate prices continuing to do well, you know, again, with jobs still largely intact. You know, that's all a positive for, you know, the spending habits of generally higher income, more wealthy consumers. Okay, so the brands and the retailers that serve those consumers are generally speaking performing better. The other, I think, probably more nuanced way to answer that question is, and I've seen this for a while, is that the consumer is still reacting favorably, in some cases very favorably, to newness. You know, so I look at like a Dick's Sporting Goods, for instance. Okay, Dick's Sporting Goods operates, you know, in the sporting goods category. Sporting goods, generally speaking, is a discretionary category, and it really serves, you know, consumers across income, you know, across income cohorts. But where Dick's is performing really well, and they've made a significant transformation in their business over the last several years, is they're much more aligned now with the best brands, the Nikes of the world and others in the footwear category, the clothing, and they're getting the best product. You know, so as a consumer of Dick's, okay, that consumer is coming to the store and they're seeing new product, they're seeing newness, and that's encouraging that consumer, you know, that consumer to spend. We do, and we've seen. So I'm going to say Dick's Sporting Goods, but really the theme there I'm trying to hit on is, you know, when a brand or a retailer is introducing new product, fresh product, the consumer is still reacting favorably to that.
Yeah, and we read a lot about a K-shaped economy where the higher income consumer is doing well and lower income consumer, you know, who is very exposed to high gas prices and grocery prices. Are you seeing that?
Yeah, I think we are. You know, that now goes back to the comment I made about, you know, it's safer right now to be in brands or in retailers that cater more to higher income, more wealthier consumers. I hear a lot. You know, there's a lot of press coverage about the K-shaped economy. To a certain extent, I think that may be oversimplified, right? Because if you look at things like, you know, and again, this gets a little muddled, but I'll mention, like, so I cover the home improvement retailers, you know, Home Depot and Lowe's. Well, generally speaking, you know, those chains cater to a higher income consumer, if for no other reason than most of their consumers own homes. Okay, now I wouldn't say it's not a luxury consumer, but it's generally speaking a higher income consumer. But, you know, one big headwind, and I've written about this a lot over the last couple of years, is basically the stagnant U.S. housing market. Right, you know, the U.S. housing market has been in this state of stagnation now, you know, for at least 1, 2, 3, maybe 3 years. And so that's really weighing upon the spending, you know, at those home improvement spenders. So the point I'm making there is, so there you have a higher income consumer, you know, at least in that category, is not spending aggressively. So that, in a way, disrupts the simplicity of, you know, the K-shaped argument. I think, look, there are definitely more pronounced pressures on the lower end of that K, the lower income consumer, but the higher income consumer is not immune to what's going on right now.
So bright spots, we should look for innovation, new product, you know, things that are generating interest among consumers. If we spend another second on trouble spots, you mentioned the auto part retailers. What are other places where our listeners should be aware of potential shifts or problems?
Well, look, that innovation comment, I'll go back to that and maybe take the other side of it. So, you know, I think it's a very interesting conversation. One that I've been having for a while now, but, you know, I still think we're in what I call the pandemic hangover. Okay. When I look across the consumer economy and, you know, the companies that operate in the consumer economy, I still think to some extent we're suffering from some of the damage that was done in the pandemic. Now, again, it's much less today than this was 1, 2, or 3 years ago. Right, but there's still damage. And one of the lingering damages is this lack of product innovation. You know, so you look at companies like Nike, like Lululemon, like Under Armour. You know, all three of those leading brands are still suffering as they basically have to restart their innovation engine. It's easy for us to talk about, you know, product innovation, introducing a new shoe. But if you talk to Nike, you know, how long does it take you to really introduce a new innovative in-demand shoe? You know, that could be 12 months at a minimum, up to 2 to 3 years. So the point I'm making there is that, you know, to answer your question, where the weak spots could be in these companies, you're still getting their innovation going after that innovation lulled meaningfully during the pandemic. I'm more concerned here in the near term, in part because of that. They're still just getting this innovation engine going. Same comment I would make at Lululemon. I think the Lululemon brand is still desired by consumers. But one of the problems Lululemon is having right now is that their core, more legacy consumers come to the stores or go to the websites, and there's nothing new. And that's, I still think, you know, that is a function of the damage that was done during the pandemic. You know, so if you answer your question, it's those companies that are suffering from a lack of innovation.
Right. And staying on corporate behavior for a minute, are you, when you talk to your companies, are you starting to see companies looking to cut prices to help consumers pay for the things that they need?
Great question. And the answer is generally no. Okay. So, you know, I'll say it because what retailers and brands are very hesitant to cut prices, right? They do it. They're constantly in the mindset, in the mode, so to say, how to strategically lift prices. And, you know, introducing new innovation is a path towards strategically lifting prices. Tariffs, as interesting as this is, or maybe counter, you know, odd as this may sound, a lot of my companies actually, I think, have benefited from tariffs and for disruptions in the global trade policy because it gave these companies, these brands, an opportunity to raise prices. Okay, because very simplistically, when a company or retailer or brand raises prices, that in and of itself becomes a driver of sales growth. So look, we know within my coverage, you know, companies are very hesitant to lower prices. Now, what you'll see, I mean, you know, that's a broad pricing, right? What you will see is not, you know, I wouldn't say I've seen this yet, but one tool they do have at their disposal is to more often have some type of promotion, you know, some type of sale. Okay, that's because that's essentially lowering prices. But again, that's a tool at their disposal. I'm not necessarily seeing that now. Now, there are companies outside of my coverage universe, you know, elsewhere in consumer, Walmart probably being the most that my colleagues cover. There's a company that's probably more prone to lowering prices just because of what they do. But within my coverage, no, at this point, prices are very, very sticky to the upside.
Okay. So, Brian, the name of this podcast series is Let's Talk Future. So as we wrap up our thoughts here, when you look ahead at the next whatever time frame you want to use, 6 to 12 months, it sounds like you are somewhat cautious. You're monitoring gas prices. What are your thoughts for the next 6 to 12 months?
Well, look, I think if someone were able to tell me where gas prices would be in 6 to 12 months, I'd have a much clearer answer on how consumer spending is going to look. I think right now, again, we know we've been talking, you know, through this conversation. I mean, there's a lot of variables out there, right? Right. There's a lot of variables at this moment. And what I think is I'm seeing a further weakening in spending in real time. The biggest contributor in my mind to that is now elevated gas prices. So again, if I think out, you know, over your time gap, you know, 6, 12, 18 months, you know, that's largely going to be a function of where gas prices are. And what happens, we've seen this historically with gas prices, is, you know, it takes a while for, so to say, the consumer to acclimate. There's almost a stubbornness on the part of the consumer. You know, they're paying, most people, we see this in our survey work. I mean, most people fill their car up with gas once a week, right? And so they'll tolerate, or at least attempt to tolerate, you know, those higher prices for a while. But then at some juncture, they have to basically, the extra money they're spending to fill up their car with gas basically has to come from somewhere. And that's where behavioral changes start. I don't think we're there yet. I think it could happen very, very soon. But again, that would also be a factor because what happens is that then you'll then, so gas prices stay elevated. The consumer starts to change their behavior. They're making less discretionary purchases elsewhere. Then those habits may stick for a while and you have to reverse that. So to answer your question, look, I mean, I think ultimately the direction of gas prices is really going to determine how consumer spending looks over the next year or so.
That makes sense. Well, Brian, thank you so much for your time and your insights. I'll leave the last word with you. Anything that you want our listeners to take away from this conversation?
Yeah, I mean, with my key message is, it's interesting to me how the market has wanted to, so to say, look past, even dismissed higher gas prices. But I think it's a mistake in doing so. You know, hopefully gas prices moderate, sir. Right. That's the hope. I'm not seeing it right now. And I think to the extent that these gas prices stay higher, there's going to have to be a lot of, you know, investors, the mindset of the market, a lot of these consumer companies are going to have to start to accept that they have this now much higher input cost effect in their businesses.
Well, there you have it. Brian, thank you so much for your time. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Nice talking to you too. I appreciate it.